Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for the next in the Expectations series today. And that's talking about Evan Bearnston, the seventh round guard drafted out of Northwestern, and Teddy Buchanan, the second year inside linebacker, now coming back to us. And joining us for that is Jack Chasney. Jack, how you doing?
Ken, very excited to talk about these two guys today. Very excited.
So Bearnston, a little bit of a surprising pick, I would say, and maybe became more surprising after the UDFA round because they signed Nick Dawkins. And then you kind of ask yourself the question, well, why is Dawkins not the guy they would pick in the seventh round as opposed to Bearnston, who appears to be primarily a guard and not really a center candidate?
Yeah, it comes down to when you get it that late in the seventh round, I feel like it's who do you think you can have the best chance at signing and who do you want more? Who do you want to make sure you can get? And I guess Bearnston was a guy that Ledford really wanted. And you said, like, judging by a phone call, his draft phone call, Ledford was very hyped to get this guy. So it much depends on that sort of thing when it gets down and dirty.
Yeah, it did sound like it. Now, they go through a whole stage of people they talk to when they make the draft call, and I'm sure folks have seen those largely, but DaCosta is first, then Minter, then Declan Doyle briefly, and then Ledford. And Ledford was by far the most excited about the Bearnston call, and he was kind of on it at fourth in the group, but sounded really good. And it's Ledford's energy is very positive. I hope he is the kind of quality offensive line coach the Ravens need him to be, because he's a very important cog right now in making the Ravens offense good again. But Bearnston, strange pick. He is 26 years old in September. He played a year at Northwestern, five at South Dakota State, sat out another year. So he's really been in college for a very long time. Average kind of a size for a guard at 6'4", 301, and 32 and an eighth inch arms preclude him from playing on the outside, certainly. Very average athleticism, mediocre to poor athleticism, I would say, to go with an age that is unusual. So most of what I think Ledford liked was that attacking style he saw in his play.
Yeah, very aggressive, just off the ball, kind of really wants to get after guys. Sometimes that he could be a little over-aggressive, which let him get beat, but there was definitely something Ledford saw, and judging by his age, he really does not have a lot of time to make a roster. He needs to be ready now if he wants to play in the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely true. I mean, there is no tomorrow for a player like Evan. He can't wait for a developmental path. He wouldn't be expected to get better even over the course of 3 years from now. He probably will not be a better player than he is right now. And that's not true of most players when they enter the league. They're usually a better player 3 years after they enter the league. He may pick up some technical things from Ledford that will help, but I think it's unlikely. Played for two national championship teams at South Dakota State, which is great, but it's also FCS play. So a lot of his college play, we have to put in context, and we have to say, does this really mean what it would mean at a Power Four school? And I don't think there's any way we could come to that conclusion.
Yeah, no. Though he did play in the Big Ten his final year, but that was for Northwestern, so not a lot of big competition, I think. But he still played against some good teams and didn't let up a single sack this season in the Big Ten, according to PFF. So he did play well when he made the jump. So
yeah, that's something to be really, really happy about. And I would be happier about it if it didn't come at age 25. And there are a number of players in this year's draft who had their best season very late, a lot of times due to NIL money. I don't think that was the case with Bearnston, but Messidor, for example, is a guy who very late had a good year. And there's others as well. Seems like a lot of the Texas Tech defense was older players who were NIL'd for an additional year to get some very secure money and take a year removed from probably having a decent chance at an NFL career. Probably should have been out of the draft already in some of those cases.
Yeah, you're going to see that a lot more frequently now with NIL, college players staying an extra year, going to a different team just for the money and maybe not getting somewhere else.
Yeah, I think we've certainly seen it a fair amount. Penalties, a little bit of a problem for him in college. 16 and 3,360 college snaps, which is one every 210. It's about half the rate of John Simpson. You've heard me complain about that before, but it's a fairly high rate. But here's the not as great thing. He had five of those this last year when he's in Big Ten play, and only 11 in a lot of snaps before that. Probably not too much of a difference in rate, but a slight increase in rate last year at least when he's in the Big Ten. Per PFF, he's been a better run blocker than pass blocker. That's always the wrong combination, by the way. And, you know, some of it, part of what I think Ledford likes about Bjornsson is that he could be a leader by example within his room. The guy who he says, hey, come on, Evan, come on over here and show him how the rep is done kind of thing. When he wants them to be, a pushing for that first contact, pushing to be quick out of their stance, getting their first step correct. Bjornsson may be a guy that Ledford really feels can deliver on that and be a guy he can point to as someone who didn't have a lot, well, any pro experience beforehand, lots of experience, but not much pro experience and can do that.
Also, a little bit of the scheme fit too. He's pretty much the exact kind of guard Ledford likes. He fits well in a zone scheme and gap scheme. So, kind of where Ledford tends to move his running games and just how he likes his offensive linemen to play. So it all depends on how this all shakes out. But he has a lot of competition to even make this roster breaking
Yeah,
camp.
that's something that's central to the discussion of any of these young Ravens linemen is the Ravens have a ton of young talent to sift through. And if you look at who they have, who's I think certain on the roster, I think they have seven guys. We have Jones and then the star and then Vincent, who are both backups. They're essentially locked in. Rosengarten, Ioane, Simpson, Stanley. Actually, that's six total they have. And then they have a big center competition that's going on now where I'm not giving anybody a spot, but Pinter has a lot of guaranteed money. So he may be a guy that the Ravens are unwilling to part ways with if he, even if he performs a little, doesn't win the job, so he may still be almost guaranteed a backup role by the money he's given. And then they have another guy who's really on the outside looking in right now in Voorhees, who will earn a big escalator this year if he makes the team, but may not do it. And so that'd be a possibility.
That's the thing. It's do they want to go with the guy with the most experience in the NFL and Danny Pinter? Do they want to keep Voorhees around even with that escalator, see what he can do this year, even though both of the guard spots are pretty much guaranteed to be Simpson and Ioane? I mean, it's really just coming down to who has the most flexibility in those positions.
So, you know, when you talk about experience in the NFL, this is one of the interesting things. Voorhees actually has more career experience than Pinter in terms of snaps. Pinter's been around forever. He's 30 years old. And Voorhees has played only two seasons, but Voorhees probably has, what, 50% more snaps, perhaps more? Because I know that Pinter only has about 1,000 career snaps. And just to look at Voorhees really quickly here, in terms of his career snaps, he has 1,237. So he's got, you know, 30% more career snaps than Pinter did, which is actually kind of funny, but they're acting like Pinter is very experienced. But Pinter's been through camp a number of times. If you included his preseason snaps, he well could be ahead of a player like Voorhees, given how many years he's been around the league. But I wouldn't really call him an experienced guy either. And that's one of the things. It's a lot worse to be 30 years old and have 900 career snaps than it is to be 25, have 2 years, even though they haven't been good, and have 1,237 career snaps. The thing that's going to get Pinter the job over Voorhees is the fact that he can play center and the guaranteed money. The differences in money that they would pay the two players, but I don't think it's really the experience he has that is specifically would put him ahead of a player like Voorhees.
Yeah, that's fair. I also just remember listening to their Lounge podcast, and like Ledford was really liked Pinter based on the athleticism he had, which is kind of shocking because there's not many plays. But then kind of look at him, he can pull from the center position a lot, which is very nice to see. And he's able to move very quickly laterally, which is always nice for a zone offense. So that's kind of like what I think Ledford likes in him. And it's hard to see that from Voorhees, which he did do last year, but he doesn't have the flexibility at center.
If we're talking about either Bjornsson, Pinter, whatever offensive line you're talking about, I'm not making this specific to any lineman. The differences in value between those who zone block well and those who gap block well or power block well, combination block well, whatever you want to call it, the differences between those are relatively small. Okay, so this guy fits a zone scheme. This guy fits a power scheme. Is a detail element. I'm not denying that it has some value, but it pales in comparison to differences in pass blocking ability. Differences in pass blocking ability effectively apply to every pass blocking play. All teams run some combination of zone and power, and you don't completely misutilize a player even if he is not a great fit for that scheme, because typically there's something within that scheme that he can do well, and good coaching will bring that out and figure out how to maximize that player even within a scheme that is not a perfect fit for him. And this is where I think that people who talk about guys being a good fit for one scheme or the other, they're often overlooking the most important thing, which is pass blocking. And it's icing on the cake to be a perfect fit for a zone scheme like that. And it was for Tyler Linderbaum. Tyler Linderbaum, hey, the icing was really good, but the cake wasn't there. And that's a big problem. You got to be a good pass back. There wasn't, that's not too fair to say to Linderbaum that the cake wasn't there. There was some cake there. He was a okay pass blocker, but you can't pay him the top money ever given to a center by 50% for being just a mediocre pass blocker. He has to be better than that. Anyway.
Now, it all boils, as you were saying, it all does boil down to how well they can protect Lamar Jackson. And if we're moving into a more timing-based offense with Doyle, that is going to come into really re come really into play here, because Lamar makes his best plays scrambling around a lot. If he has to sit in that pocket for like a play to open up and be perfect on that throw, he can't have pressure in his face. He can throw under pressure and he can do it well at times, but if you want to have the best offense available, you need to be able to protect him and give him time to make the throw when it opens up.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of people don't really think of it in this way, but the offensive linemen are very important for setting those passing lanes for Lamar. So if this, you know, if the receiver's breaking open in a certain spot where Lamar needs to have a spot open between guard and center or guard and tackle on the left side, say, to make that throw to the X receiver, those offensive linemen, they have responsibility to handle that and to create it for him. And it's not always super easy, but Lamar, I hope whatever they do with timing, the one thing I hope they do, Jack, is that they don't completely take away from Lamar Jackson the ability to improvise. And I don't really think it would even be possible to do that. Even if you said, hey, we got a first read, it's Bateman on the slant, coming across, we want you to hit him, 6 yards off the line of scrimmage at this exact point. Even if they had that, he's going to look for that, maybe, hopefully, as the first opportunity. And then he's going to move around. He's going to make another play if that passing lane isn't that. And that's what, I guess, it's what any quarterback would do. But with Lamar, you really are getting the best out of Lamar when you get into the improvisation step. And you really see that in time to throw numbers. Most quarterbacks, they get worse as time to throw increases, because the longer that they sit in that pocket, the better chance they get hammered and taken out. Lamar Jackson, just the opposite. You get really high quality reps from extended plays.
That's really also because like defensives are so afraid of him running at
Yeah.
this point in his career. They're going to move down to try and stop him, and late people are going to open up. The defense is more likely to make a mistake with Lamar running around in the backfield than they are him just standing still in the pocket, because they're just always going to be considering, if he starts running, I'm going to have to leave and get him. And you've seen Lamar fake guys out and then make a throw like that to players when they break open after a defender bites on him running.
All right, we just got into this a side discussion because we were talking about who's going to make the roster on the interior offensive line. And there's really, I think there's three spots remaining. It could be four, but I think there's three spots remaining for a fairly substantial group of players. It's Dawkins, Gwynn, Bjornsson, Pinter, Bullock, and Voorhees. At least two of those guys have to be able to play center because none of the other six that are locks can play center. So they have to have two guys that they can trust to play center out of that group. And they could have three on the team. That would mean they carry nine offensive linemen. Or they could have four if they carry 10. If they carry 10, the consequence of that is probably going to be that Rasheen Ali gets cut. He's probably the bubble guy among the 25 offensive players right now, along with the 10th offensive lineman. And I don't think the Ravens want to do that. I'm not even allowing for the possibility the Ravens carry a third quarterback in that, which it might also be a competing factor with the 10th offensive lineman or the fourth running back.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ali would make it to the practice squad. I don't know if he's shown much to other NFL teams to the point where they're going to be scrambling. Oh, the Ravens just let this guy go. Let's sign him. Let's get him off of waivers quickly. He does bring a good special teams element, but once again, we don't have Harbaugh anymore who really emphasized the special teams element. So if they want to stick with, get that extra lineman on there just to have that extra depth and maybe that extra guy who can flip into center too, or yeah, it just really all comes down to that at this point.
Yeah, minimal poaching risk for Ali, I would agree. I think that you nailed it right there. Well, let's get right into it and talk about what does a good season look like for Evan and what does a great season look like for him? Good season.
A good season is making the practice squad and maybe having one to three elevations and maybe getting a snap in a game. If he could somehow get a snap in a regular season game, that's great. But at the same time, that may not be even enough for a good season because he's going to be 26 and then in 2027, he's going to be 27. He does not have time to just sit on the practice squad. He needs to take advantage of every opportunity. So if he makes the practice squad, he does not have long for the NFL, in my opinion.
Right. I agree with that entirely. So it's kind of like the wager on himself that he's making at this point in the NFL is akin to a parlay. And so if I set these at the 60th and 80th percentile outcomes, a 60th percentile outcome on a parlay is completely useless because you maybe hit three of five, say, games that you call, three of five results, but you need five out of five to score on the thing. And that's kind of where he is. He needs an almost perfect outcome this evening. In some ways, I'm not even sure an 80th percentile outcome is good enough for him to have a sustained NFL career, but we'll talk about what that is in a minute. I'm otherwise with you exactly. At the 60th percentile, I think he's on the practice squad. He holds that role for the entire season. He may see action as a backup elevation. He may see a snap, he may not. I think he probably at the 60th percentile does enough in practice that he remains in the 90-man plans for 27. So part of what the 60th percentile is going to be kind of invisible to the fans is that, you know, he's impressing Ledford in practice. He's doing the things he wants to do, but we never see any of that. We'll see a little bit in the preseason from him and hopefully he does okay there, but we'll know basically if he makes the practice squad, if he's kind of met the bar there. But anyway, if he's going to play in the NFL for 5 years, and that would be kind of on the outside of expectations for a player like this who's making the NFL late, he's probably got to have a better result than that. So what does a great season look like to you?
A great season would be, I'm trying to think. A great season is somehow making it on the 53-man roster at some point. Maybe it's due to injury or he just plays super well in the preseason and somehow earns it out of camp. which I think is very low likely unless he shows the ability to play center well too. But that would be a great season where he's just playing a backup guard and maybe fills in on some heavy run plays to be like the seventh guy on the O-line if they want to just power the football down into the end zone on one play.
All right. I think you're very close to me again. I said circumstances conspire, bad for the Ravens, to create a 53-man roster spot for him at some point during the season as part of either a 9- or 10-man room. He plays up to 50 snaps as the sixth offensive lineman or emergency replacement, either guard spot. Practiced and play impresses Ledford such that he's part of the 2027 53 discussion. Doesn't mean he makes it then. And you know what? It's a moving target. A lot of things are going to change for Bjornsson that won't, most of them won't be positive next year. He'll be 27, but he's going to be competing against other 22 and 23 year olds that the Ravens draft next year or even have as UDFAs next year. And it's going to be another uphill climb probably to make the roster. So hopefully this is a year where he just completely exceeds expectation and changes the narrative on himself heading into 27.
Yeah, I saw a comment on a Reddit post saying it'd be the most Ravens thing ever if he's just somehow the best offensive lineman taken in the draft or best center taken in the draft. That'd be the most Ravens thing ever, getting them at pick 253 or wherever he was taken.
All right, let's move on. Talk about Teddy Buchanan. I imagine most of the people, they see the two names of the show. That's the one they're interested in. Round 4 pick out of Cal last year. Has the good size for an inside linebacker you like, and played quite well as a rookie. Won a defensive rookie of the month award. I forget which month that was. Maybe October. He won it, and only had that one season in a Power 5 conference at the time at Cal. But context is certainly an issue in terms of his college career. Last year, though, he put together a season that certainly, given his remaining runway, looked pretty damn good. And, you know, the Ravens have had not a lot to compare him to in recent years, with the Patrick Queen situation is the obvious one. Now, I'm going to try not to beat on Patrick Queen too much this thing, but I'm going to say two things that I think are undeniably true. Teddy Buchanan had a better rookie year than Patrick Queen by a mile, and Teddy Buchanan had a better year than Patrick Queen did in 2025 by a fair amount as well.
Yeah. He's just really ahead of the game than a lot of people, I think, expected. He went from being a will linebacker most of college, then switching to Mike when he transferred. And now he went back to will, and he just looks a lot more comfortable in that position.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S., BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12 plus years of experience and industry leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session, based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Too. But he was really a guy that I don't think anybody thought would be the most impactful rookie, and he really was, just on a level of helping the run game and just honestly making Roquan look a little bit more comfortable. Because I always like kind of saw it a little bit whenever Trenton was on the field. It looked like Roquan was always like just double checking on Trenton because I don't know if he fully trusted him. And then when Teddy was on the field, I thought Ro was more free and comfortable to do whatever he would like, that sort of thing. That's kind of what I saw. but he's really a guy that wants to earn everything he can on the field. I mean, he cut his hair in the pre-draft process to earn back the flow because he had this huge flow at Cal. So, yeah.
It's interesting. It's a nice mechanism to that he's allowed to let his hair grow if he continues to play well, kind of thing. If he has a bad game, he has to cut it again. Maybe. I'm not sure exactly what his way of handling that was, but I agree with you completely on the earlier statement about really overperforming relative to expectations. And I'll just read what was my great season for him coming into 25, and that is that play and or circumstances push his playing time to 25% plus of snaps. I really thought Simpson would be the starter. Displays an intriguing combination of ILB contributions, run, pass, and pass rush, which aggregate to slightly above the league average and provide hope for growth. Plays core special teams role that softens the blow of the departing inside linebackers Harrison Borden Welch, and the Ravens do not draft an inside linebacker in 2026 prior to round six. He pretty much hit on every single one of those. This was a year I thought they could have drafted an inside linebacker, by the way, even with what they had going into the season being fairly strong for 26. I thought this is a year they might have tried to solve their 2027 problems. And the guy I really liked was Anthony Hill of Texas this year in the draft.
Yeah, I was on the opposite. I like Jacob Rodriguez a lot this coming out, and then he just went. He went where I thought he was going to go. I thought he was going to go on the upper end of the second round just because of there weren't many that Mike linebackers or inside linebackers viewed that highly. So I was like, he's going to go before we pick. So it's not going to matter, but I would have loved to see him there. But yeah, it was also just a showing a comfort level too, that the Ravens did not feel they needed to really attack this in UD position, either in UDFA with, I think they may have only gotten one inside linebacker for in undrafted free agency. So that really just shows their level of trust in Teddy too. And they showed that last year quite a few times with making him the starter from week two onwards until he got injured, unfortunately. But he was showing improvement game after game. So I really do think he's poised to have hopefully a big year, barring how he looks coming off the ACL, which is the main thing I think a lot of people are concerned about.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly has to figure into how we would set our expectations for this year is how cleanly does he return from that injury. And we'll get to that in a minute or two. In terms of how he played this last year, I think there are a few things to look at. I think from a coverage perspective, he was pretty good. He avoided a lot of really big plays against him. 6.6 yards per target is good. 100.6 passer rating against is not as good, but there's a lot of linebackers. Your opposition passer rating is highly influenced by the number of interceptions and touchdowns you have, and that's also always a small number. So if it was like 3-0, you'd have a very high passer rating against. He gave up one touchdown with no interceptions, so his passer rating is a little higher than normal. But it's you're always working off a very small number of observations, a very small sample size of those total touchdowns plus interceptions. Anyway, he was okay in that regard. I think he could be better, and he kind of needs to be better. But good downhill trigger. I like that. Let you talk about his coverage before I jump into his run defense.
He was pretty good in coverage. He was picked on a lot, though. I think he was like thrown to the most out of anyone on our not the most out of anyone on our defense, but targeted pretty heavily by quarterbacks when they were facing us. But he also was never like bad. He may not have broken up the pass, but he's very quick to get the guy down. Even he really didn't want to let the guy like make a play on him. He didn't want to be the guy on the highlight reel getting hurdled or something like that. He wanted to be the guy making the tackle and stopping him. So that's kind of what you saw, is that high level motor and really wanting to go forward.
By comparison, Patrick Queen had 3 years with Roquan where he had a better coverage rating than Teddy did last year. But Patrick Queen also had 2 years with the Steelers where he's worse than Teddy was last year, and his rookie year where he's terrible. That were all significantly worse than in terms of a PFF grade and in terms of almost any other measure you would look at it. The other thing that he did very well as a rookie was tackle well. That led to good run defense. He's got a deficiency in run defense I don't want to talk about, but his missed tackles are low. He was in the top 14 of 59, so in the top quartile, obviously, of missed tackle rate among inside linebackers at 8.7%. That's among the guys who had at least 50% of the highest snaps. I always... is so unwieldy to talk about that. I'm just going to say the 50% snap limit for PFF means 50% of the highest snaps of any inside linebacker. And so that's a very long definition to use. I'm just going to say of the 50% snap group, and I hope people can follow along and not get too tied up in that. So the 8 missed tackles were good. And the problem was the number of stops. He didn't have a lot of stops for defensive wins, despite having a fair number of tackles, which means a lot of his tackles were made off ball. And he's having fewer where he's getting in the hole, stopping a guy for 2 yards on 3rd and 3 or for even 3 yards on 2nd and 7 kind of thing. He doesn't have as many of those as Roquan had by any stretch. Which led to only a 2.8-1 stops to missed tackle rate. 22 he had of those and 8 missed tackles.
Yeah, I mean, when you watch the games, he misread gaps at times. He would try to shoot one and then it'd open up next to him, but it's too late. He's already being blocked by someone, so he's taken out of the play. So he did not have the stops or the full run defense that you like to see, just because... one, he's a 4th-round rookie. You're not expecting him to be able to shoot gaps as well as what you would expect, like, a Jahad Campbell to do in his rookie year. But you would like to see a good amount of improvement coming up in that ability to shoot the gaps and play there. So,
yeah, I would say it's important they take a step forward in terms of stops in this next season. And that, in a lot of ways for me, that'll be one of the deciding factors in terms of, is he ready to take over a Mike responsibility, say. So we'll see if that works.
Yeah. If that's how it needs to go, and for him to take over the mic, he needs to do a lot, I think, for the Ravens to even feel comfortable giving him a shot at Mike next year, because he was primarily a will linebacker in college. So he needs to do a lot for the Ravens to even feel comfortable considering him for the mic and not going after anyone in 2027 that really challenges him for the mic spot.
It's a surprisingly difficult role to fill. In recent years, there's definitely been a higher valuations of Mike linebackers. One thing that set the Mike linebackers back a little bit was the year of the two Devons. Devin Bush and Devin White were drafted. Neither of them was the player initially. Although Devin Bush has come along, had a good late career resurgence here. Neither of them were the player anybody wanted originally. And they were drafted number 5 and number 10 overall. You know, you had Patrick Queen and Jordan Brooks and a lot of other guys kind of as reach selections into the first, back into the first round. And that was kind of the apex of the entire thing. But even now, I mean, some players like a couple of years ago, Campbell went very high and was a guy that, I don't think anybody had projected as high as, what, about the 15th selection? Is that where he went? I think that's right.
No. Jahad Campbell? He went...
No, the Lions guy.
Lions guy. Yeah, he went higher. He went like 18, I think.
Yeah, let me just see where that was. Jack Campbell was drafted number 18. You're correct, in 2023. So he's already in his 4th season. It does not feel like that.
He just signed like a mega deal with the Lions. I think it was 4 years, $86 million or something along those lines.
Well, he's probably the best inside linebacker in the game right now. So I'm sure that's one of the reasonable contracts, as opposed to, you know, some of the others where, the 5th or 8th or 15th best player at the position jumps up and gets the best salary that's ever been awarded.
Yeah.
All right. What else we had to say? Big year on special teams, a 5-unit special teams player. That's, by the way, 4-unit special teams players are not that uncommon, and your linebackers are a big source of your 4-unit special teams players if they're quick enough to cover kicks and be on the punt return team as well. And they play their special teams big, so they play on the offensive line on the punt team, the 2 to the left and 2 to the right of the long snapper. And you need at least four of those for every time you line up. So it's important to have those. But he also played on the field goal block unit. And he made 7 of 8 tackles on special teams where missed tackle rates are a lot higher. So I thought a really good first year from him in terms of what he accomplished on special teams.
Yeah, he really showed, just took every opportunity, as I've kind of been saying, what Beerson needs to do. Teddy is the guy who took every opportunity to show what he can do at the level of NFL. And he was, I think, leading the team in tackles, or was second in the team in tackles when he went down with his injury. So it really shows the amount of motor that this guy has. And, like, I mean, credit where credit's due. I mean, Zach Gore does know linebackers, it seems. So he was able to get a good guy in Teddy and get him to do his best in the NFL as a fourth round pick. So,
you know, one of the nice things about being a fine special teams player, and this is really more true than the other player I'm going to name, because the guy who led the Ravens in special teams tackles was Keandre Jackson this last year. Fantastic year on special teams. When you have that already in your background, you automatically get every opportunity to try and help the team on your side of the ball, whether that's offense or defense. If you're a tight end, well, then they try and figure out ways to use you as a blocker, come up with some way that you can be used in a limited receiving role, like Kelly Washington was years ago. He came as a great special teams player to the Ravens, so it wasn't a surprise. But you know, Anthony Levine became a great dimeback for the Ravens because he was a great special teams player. I don't really think it was the other way around. I think that was the way. And Keandre Jackson could get an opportunity on the back end that arises from that. Now, in the case of Buchanan, if he becomes a Mike linebacker or becomes 100% of snaps, guys, he's probably actually going to give up his special teams role because he'll be too important to the defense for him to be playing the extra snaps on special teams and have that risk.
Yeah, I mean, he did get it. His ACL tear did come on the special teams play. So it definitely is going to, how he's playing this year, it's going to be curious if they're going to keep him on special teams. But if we get later in the year and he's showing that he's a very important player on this defense, if they're going to kind of pull him back a little bit on special teams, moving him just to mainly punt returns or kickoffs units, or even just field goal defense, just trying to figure out how can we utilize him, but also keep one or more our valuable assets safe, one or more valuable defenders safe.
All right, let's move on and talk about what a good season looks like for Teddy. You start us off.
Well, a good season for Teddy really just comes down to how he looks coming off the injury. Is he able to kind of knock the rust off early? So a good season for me is he kind of shows, is a little slow at the start, maybe the first 3 to 4 games. He's a little bit slow knocking off the rust, but then kind of goes from there and shows improvement against coverage ability, against running backs and tight ends, which I think is quite important for him, and improves his shooting the gap and stopping ability. Really, what I'm hoping to see for his metrics is 100 to 110 tackle season, which is on par for what he was on pace for last year. And 1 to 2 sacks, 7 tackles for loss. He had a forced fumble last year, so let's throw a forced fumble in there. But yeah, that's really it. It's hard to judge him because of that ACL injury. Because you're going to lessen your expectations, and then he's going to kind of, if he's the same player, that's good, I guess, but is it really that good? So it's hard to say.
So I'm of the camp that if I had to handicap it right now, I would say the bogey, the 50% bogey would be basically, maybe the 60% bogey would be pretty much the year he had last year. If he exceeds the year he had last year, first of all, I think we may have already seen some that him playing at a slightly higher level than we'd expect in the pros. You know, based on my expectation of a great season last year, I think we might say that's true. But beyond that, I think that coming off the injury, he's going to be slower to get started this year, as you mentioned. I think just no significant drop off in play from 25 would be a good result for him this year. I think he needs to maintain that starting role, deliver with solid tackling, he's going to be a two down player, I believe, which probably increases the chance that he'll stay on special teams for this year. And his special teams play remains a plus. Turns in a season very similar to his rookie year, which is good for the reasons I talked about. And he's part of the 2027 solution with the possible departures of Roquan and Simpson. Now, he almost certainly will be anyway, because, you know, he's coming off a good rookie year. Even if he were to regress somehow or have a bad year, I think he would likely be part of the 2027 solution. But that's where I have a good season pegged.
And as you said, like maintaining the starting role, he doesn't have any real competition for it.
Right.
He has Jay Higgins. Maybe I think Trenton's fully out of it at this point after being benched last year and year before. I don't see him being able to do it in the inside linebacker. Maybe they feel comfortable moving him to Sam, but even then he's very underweight for that position. So it just all comes down to what can Trenton do on special teams at this point in his career. So
Trenton didn't play any snaps. They played some three inside linebacker snaps where he is like an extra edge player on the thing, but he never lined up as a true edge. So he's not really a Sam. And the Ravens, since they don't play a 4-3, don't have an off-ball Sam linebacker. So there's not really a spot for Simpson to do that. Now, could it all change under Minter and they're playing positionless? And they do what they did with Matt Judon years ago and have him play off-ball a number of passing snaps. It's possible, but I don't really see that as a very likely outcome. I think they're going to be trying to rush with four a lot. And doing it with different people, but trying to rush with four, even if that means, you know, having Hamilton come and dropping a Zion Young or a Tavius Robinson into coverage.
I mean, Zion probably knocks in on a lot of those plays when you get down to the third down, which is where Teddy may come off the field, because if they want to keep their best guys on the field, Teddy may have to come off the field on those obvious passing downs.
For dime.
For dime. But, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely agree. So what does a great season look like?
Great season is he pretty much starts right where he left off and is improving rapidly as he was last season. He doesn't really show anything. I mean, reports are he's expected to start training camp after the ACL tear in week 15, which is that's really good if that's the case. And I hope he's not rushed back. But if he's able to play and play at a high level and is continuously improving, that is amazing for him. And I am really, if it's a great season, it's a 115 plus tackle season, 8 to 9 TFLs, an interception, and 3 sacks is what I have listed. And then plays to a level where the Ravens feel comfortable enough with him being moved to Mike, where they don't feel they need to go after a high cost free agent or like a second round pick in a Mike linebacker this upcoming draft in 2027 draft.
Yeah, that is a very significant way he can save the Ravens a lot of cap or draft capital, and either one would be a great contribution for Buchanan this year. I had placed 15 plus games, 70% plus of the defensive snaps. With the integration into Minter's system, he makes a varied combination of inside linebacker contributions. So I'm looking for some improvement there in run in particular, but pass and pass rush, which aggregate to somewhere in the top 50% of inside linebackers and provide hope for further growth. It'll be a second consecutive year, I think, of growth if he did that. He continues to play a key special teams role, although if that goes away, it's probably a good thing. If they take him off special teams, is probably a very good thing for his play at inside linebacker, particularly if they do it during the year. They're not sure at the start, and so they let him start playing special teams, and they say, "Nah, you're too valuable. We have to take you off." That's a great sign for Buchanan's ILB development. And is in consideration for a move to Mike in 2027, whether the Ravens decide to go that way or not in the end. If he just gives them the freedom to draft whoever they want at inside linebacker in 27, they'll have him. They have the possibility of re-signing a Simpson. That'd be not out of the question. There's a possibility of re-signing Roquan. It's not out of the question. I mean, Roquan is not an old man yet, and they could find a way to make a contract amenable to both parties there. And they have Higgins, and Higgins may be a guy that they think can be a two-down Mike, And already Minter has a background with the Chargers of getting more with less out of the inside linebacker position, such that they could play a platoon role there. And that's, by the way, where Buchanan could play a hybrid role, where he's a two down Will and a third down Mike. And under those, we talked to, you know, previously about the possibility of him having the green dot at some point in the future. That would be the way he'd get the green dot, is he'd be on the field for every play because he's a two down Mike who switches to two down Will who switches to Mike on third down.
Yeah, I mean, he had the green dot for one game this season, the Houston game, which wasn't our best defensive showing. But yeah, it definitely shows that's how he would earn it. And the Ravens also, they have Kyle Hamilton. He can move it inside and play those spots if they want to, like, do some creative stuff on defense moving forward and, like, put Kyle at one of the linebacker positions or like, take off one of the linebackers and just have Kyle and Teddy or Kyle and Roquan on the field at the same time.
Right. I mean, that's effectively what they do in the dime defense, yeah, is that Kyle moves to that weak side linebacker spot.
Yeah.
All right. Outstanding. It's great talking football with you, Jack. Really good discussion. You have a lot of good thoughts on these players. Do you want to tell people where they can contact you online if they'd like to?
Yeah, I'm just active in the Reddit community. I'm not going to give out my handle, but I'm very active in that area. But yeah, it's been great talking to you again. I was a big fan of the show, and I really appreciate you giving me this opportunity to come speak. I do want to shout out my brother's friend, John, who has just wrapped up his 1L year at George Mason Law School. So he's a big fan of the show too. So I figured I'd just give him a little shout out. He gave me a lot of props for the draft night. So
I appreciate it. We enjoyed your contributions to the draft coverage as well. And thanks, John, for being a good listener. Other folks out there, please use hashtag film study mailbag. If you have questions for me, I'll direct them as appropriate. And as always, please try and promote this show with one other person who you don't think has access to it, and they can listen to it directly off the website if they'd like to. Jack, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.